and welcome to this edition of Food Waste Matters. It's brought to you by Honey and Fox, sponsored by the Fight Food Waste CRC. I'm Andrew Robertson, joining you for a series of conversations with industry leaders on the front lines in the fight against food waste. We'll be discussing business, innovation, and how these concepts combine to reduce food waste in Australia and around the world. Be sure to check out our website, fightfoodwastehub.com.au, for more info about this series and for access to previous recordings, including transcripts, audio, and video. We're also on YouTube, so please subscribe to our channel. It's Food Waste Matters, all one word. Well, raising livestock is a food-intensive process. Historically, and at a smaller scale, families and farmers have supplemented animals' diets with food scraps, sometimes from their own kitchen. But in the modern world, there are some big risks associated with this practice, even though it would seem to be reducing domestic food waste. And in fact, swill feeding, as it's called, is actually an illegal practice in Australia for pigs due to the risk of disease spread. But what if there was a way to recover food waste at a larger scale, process it to remove any disease or health risks, and create a new supply for livestock such as pigs, chickens, and also aquatic creatures? Food Recycle International is rolling out a patented technology around the world that combats food waste and enhances food security by doing just that. In Australia, the company has collaborations with OzHarvest, CSIRO, and the University of New England, amongst others. To tell us more about this is Norm Boyle. He's the CEO of the company and also the inventor of the technology. So welcome, Norm.
Good morning, Andrew. How are you today?
I'm well, thanks. And I'm really interested to hear more about the solutions that you have. But first, I wonder if you can give us an understanding of the food waste problem. I think it's always worth going back to this problem. And then tell us about how Food Recycle International is helping.
Yeah, okay. Well, thank you for having me today. Food waste, as we've found out, is a global problem. It's interestingly enough, in some countries where you think it may not be a problem, such as India and Vietnam, it's actually a bigger problem because the logistics for transport of food is in some of those places quite poor. So the food waste is actually greater in those places than, in fact, it is in Australia and places like America. Of all food that is produced, as much as 35% goes to landfill and or is wasted in some way. For our statistics and work, we get most of our information from governments, because governments do a lot of work in this area to analyse and understand food waste. Well, we work on a figure of around 30% of all food that's produced is actually wasted. Yeah. The majority of that food waste goes to landfill. The go-to solutions are pretty much anaerobic digestion, which creates a gas, which can be used. And the other go-to solution is composting. Even with a lot of work in Australia around composting, mainly through the Go, FOGO type composting, we're still only keeping about 7% of all food waste out of landfill. So if you look at the global situation, it contributes about 8% to global warming. If we were able to capture the food waste and take it out of landfill, we would save a lot of greenhouse gas emissions. That's the first thing. The second thing is that if we convert it into animal feed, we then free up the raw ingredients, which are basically traded commodities, wheat, soybean, barley, corn. Those materials are traded around the world, usually in shiploads, to produce animal feed for animals such as poultry, pigs, and aquaculture feed. So if we can take this food waste material and successfully feed it to animals in those three categories, then we free up those raw ingredients so that people can use that material back for food. The wheat could be used for making bread, and in some countries that can be a critical factor for food security, if you understand where I'm coming from. So about 5 or 6 years ago, Food Recycle patented some technology. Now, we needed to think outside the box a bit here, because perfectly good food on the restaurant table tonight, when you or I are eating it, it's perfectly good food. And 10 minutes later, when the scraps or the preparation materials are put into a bin, all of a sudden it's waste. It was perfectly good food 10 minutes earlier. So we need to rethink that whole idea about the waste. It's really, what we're really doing is we're actually repurposing food waste, and we're just putting it further down the food chain. So if we were to collect food waste from a restaurant that's worked maybe breakfast, lunch and dinner, and closes at 11 o'clock at night or 12 o'clock, and a truck picks up that food waste early that next morning, within a couple of hours, we can have that processed into a dry granular, biosecurity safe, shelf stable ingredient that can go into making a poultry, pig or aquaculture feed. Now, the secret to the technology is that in the past, the world has put all this material together and they call it swill. So it all just all gets dumped together. The bakery goes in with the restaurant, and the restaurant goes in with the hospital food waste. And so it just becomes a big mishmash and no one knows what it's all about. What Food Recycle does is it collects food waste streams from such sources as restaurants, cafes, retirement villages, hospitals, bakery waste, supermarkets, farm waste, abattoirs, and food manufacturers. There's hundreds of different food manufacturers out there that all create waste when they're making a food product, biscuit manufacturers, even chocolate manufacturers. So if we keep, the secret is that if we keep those food waste streams collected separately, process them separately, and store them as a dry granular powder, analyze their nutrient and amino acid values. The amino acids are important in animal feed. If we then take that information for that food waste stream and we put it into a feed formulation program that we've developed with the University of New England, then when we know what we want to make, and there's lots of different feed formulations, for example, poultry might have a dozen different feed formulations for the different stages of the birds. So, and pigs will do the same. They'll have weaner, grower, and different feed formulations. Aquaculture, you need a different feed formulation for virtually every fish. So what happens is that we have the feed formulation that's required, which might be a certain amount of protein and a certain amount of other minerals and a whole bunch of amino acids. So what we do is we have 6 or 8 or 10, even up to 20 food waste streams that are being processed from different sources, kept separately. We then analyze that material, put the information into the program, and the program will actually select the correct amount of material from each of those waste streams to formulate a complete feed. So it will, and that's repeatable, which is what the industry needs. It doesn't want poultry feed today at 20% protein and it's 15% tomorrow. It needs 20% protein every time. We need to nail it. And some of these ingredients are down to 0.01% of something. So the feed formulation program works because we have a large number of separate food waste streams available. It's a bit like if you're going over to, Andrew, if you're going over to Grandma's on Sunday, to meet up, she's going to go to the pantry and she's going to pull out some ingredients to make a cake for you. And those ingredients are a bit like what we have in our silos, and she's going to blend those into the perfect cake that she knows. You're going to have a cup of this and half a cup of that, a little bit of this and a pinch of that. Well, that's what we do successfully, and we can repeat the animal feed profile every time, if that makes sense to you.
Yes, that does make sense. And as you mentioned, it's so important to get the right balance for the different stage of growth of the animal, and indeed between different species. You mentioned there are quite a few different varieties of feed that the process makes, and certain waste streams are more appropriate to the production of those products than others. How do you go about accessing those waste streams? You mentioned there's quite a few things like restaurants, of course, the place like hospitals and so on. How do you set up the access, and where do you process? Do you process centrally, bringing all that waste to you, or do you have a more distributed processing model?
That's a really good question, because initially when you talk to people in the industry, you talk to people that are growing animals, they're really good at that, and they're horrified at the idea of collecting food waste. If you talk to people that are in other industries, they're also horrified. So the very, very interesting thing is that we're talking about commercial food waste here. Okay, we're not talking about home food waste. The quantities are quite small, and those materials are far better off going into FOGO for composting, etc. But the federal government has identified about 3.5 million tons of commercial food waste in Australia that is suitable, completely suitable for animal feed. Okay, so we have a conversion ratio of about 50%. Okay, so if we take 1 ton of food waste, we can get 0.5 ton of animal feed. Okay, and I'll come back to the collection side in a moment. But if you think about this for a minute, if the world produced 100 kilos, just 100 kilos of food, just 100 kilos, we know, and it's not me saying it, we know from all the statistics that 30 kilos of that food will be wasted. If Food Recycle takes that 30 kilos of food waste, it can produce 15 kilos of, for example, poultry feed. Now, if I take that 15 kilos of poultry feed, and we're talking now, we're into our third day. The food was made on day one. The waste was produced on day two. The poultry feed was made on day three. On day four, if I feed that 15 kilos of poultry feed to chickens, I'll get 125 eggs, or I'll get 10 kilos of chicken meat. So let's look at the reverse to that. If I say, right, okay, we're going to compost this. If I'm going to compost it, I'll put it out, and it'll take me about 30 days to compost it. I then need to put it onto a farm somewhere onto the land. I need to put some seeds in the ground. I need to either irrigate or hope it's going to rain. I need to harvest the crop. I then need to feed it to the chickens. It's about a 12-month cycle. So if I compare the composting to improve the land to get the wheat that I would have got anyway, the improvement factor is let's call it 10%. I might get 10% more wheat. But I've produced 125 eggs in 4 days. So it's extremely powerful if you're using the material for what it was originally designed for, not turning it into something else, into compost, for example. And I'm not trying to knock the composting industry. It's got a place. But if I convert food into food, which is food waste into food for chickens, as an example, that's the shortest route to getting an end result that's highly acceptable. And it's all about the highest and best use of a material. And that's what the recycling industry has struggled with for the last 30, 40 years, is you need subsidies all the time to get a successful recycling business going. You don't need any subsidies for this, because the food waste, which you generally get paid to take away, is actually producing highly profitable results, because instead of having to buy wheat at $300 or $400 a ton to make a poultry feed, instead of buying soybean at $1,100 a ton to make poultry feed, the restaurant is actually paying you to take this material away. And the other really interesting answer to your original question on collection is that at a commercial food waste level, somebody is collecting that food waste every single day, right now. So we don't have to reinvent that wheel. We just have to be the person collecting that food waste, because the restaurants don't leave it sitting in the restaurant for days at a time. It's got to be gone every day. Food manufacturers don't leave that around. The abattoirs don't leave all the bone material and all the offcuts laying around for days at a time. It's got to go out of their premises and somewhere every single day. So we're not really reinventing the wheel. There are some smart technologies that we've patented for the collection, reinvented the collection process a little bit, with some smart lids for bins and some smart collection ideas for trucks and things like that. But essentially, the existing infrastructure can be utilized to take that food waste. And essentially what you're doing is, instead of taking it to landfill, you're taking it to a production facility where it can be processed. The thing that is somewhat important is that if we can get food waste producers to keep their general rubbish out of it, because what's happened is that it's become a general waste thing. People just put it all together and throw it out. So there are a lot of people separating their food waste now from general rubbish. It's not completely essential, because our production facility can depackage food, for example. It depackages, takes the food out of packages from, say, Woolworths, for example. But if there's some serviettes and there's some bits and pieces, even if a knife or fork drops into the food, or even a plate, our machines will take that out. But we don't want to be in the rubbish separation business if we can avoid it. Now, the goodwill in the industry is tremendous. And you speak to people and say, look, we'd like to collect your food waste, and this is what's going to happen to it. And it's not going to go to landfill and create methane and go into global warming. Then the University of Western Sydney did a survey for us on 35 restaurants, and 17 of those were actually paying more to their waste provider if they guaranteed it would go off to composting or somewhere else other than to landfill. So there's a lot of goodwill in the waste industry to do better than what we're doing.
Well, that's really interesting. It sounds like you've got an extremely efficient solution there that supports food security, helps us reduce food waste, and also there's that emissions reduction angle that you mentioned. I'm interested in also some of the other challenges, and you mentioned this earlier, and the one I'm interested in is biosecurity. Now, as you know very well, the problem in the past with swill feeding or taking food scraps and feeding them directly to animals like pigs is that it introduces a pretty high risk of disease spread. Can you tell us a bit more about that problem and how your technology neutralizes it?
Yeah, that's a fundamental problem. Even the existing pandemic we've just gone through came from a wet market, and that's essentially a food market. So food and food waste can carry diseases. There's no question. So during this research and development period of 5 or 6 years, we've had to address the safe provision of food waste converted into animal feed. So we've had to work, unfortunately, which is pretty common in Australia, each state has slightly different regulations. So we've had to work with every state and territory in Australia to get those regulations for the provision of food waste converted into animal feed and provided to industry. And there are regulations around that we need to meet. We employed a gentleman who you can find on our website, a guy called Ron Glanville, a really, really terrific guy. He was the Queensland chief vet and biosecurity officer for 40 years. He's been awarded by the federal government for his work in biosecurity, keeping Australia safe from all sorts of diseases. So he's on our panel. He designed our biosecurity protocols, production biosecurity protocols, and the general protocols for the provision of the feed safely to animals. As a by note, it's quite interesting. There are some chemicals that are used by farmers on crops, for example, that at certain levels are appropriate for humans to consume. So in other words, they've sprayed the cabbages. It's okay for us to consume, but it's actually not okay for animals. So it's a bit of a paradox. It's just that no one's actually addressed it. So there was a lot of work had to be done. The bottom line to all that is that we have what's called a biosecurity step within the production line, so that all the food waste goes through a dehydration process to start with, and the material comes out as a dry granular powder at sub 10% moisture. At sub 10%, the microbial activity is almost stopped in the material. It's a bit like your Weet-Bix. It doesn't go off. A bit like your cornflakes. That type of material is all low in moisture content. Now, what happens is, in line on the production process, the biosecurity step is a time and temperature step to kill all known, and I mean all known, diseases that could be carried with the food waste. I'll give you the worst example. Australia imports pork from overseas. Those pork products could carry African swine fever, which has killed about a third of the pigs internationally. It's a very deadly disease for pigs. Pork could come in, Andrew, and you and I could sit down and have a nice big pork chop tonight, and it could have African swine fever. You and I are not going to get sick, or we're not going to suffer. Cooking won't actually kill it. And we could throw the pork chop out, the bone out, goes off to landfill. A feral pig could come in and grab that, and the pig won't get sick, he'll die. They just die from this disease. It's a very deadly disease, and it would be spread across Australia, and everyone knows the feral pig industry, feral pig problem is huge. Birds could come into landfill and get this material. So if you think about this for a minute, governments local governments, state governments, and federal governments have a huge benefit from the food recycle process, because if we were able to collect the majority of commercial food waste every morning or afternoon or whenever it's collected, within a few hours, we don't store it, within a few hours it's through the production facility, it's then the next day, basically, it is biosecurity safe, which means that all known diseases and pathogens are being killed in that material, and it's sitting on a shelf, and the government has got that biosecurity step for that food waste at no cost, because it's part of the production process. You can imagine if we didn't have this, and you're saying to a restaurant, look, your food waste could be carrying diseases, we need you to do a biosecurity step on that material before you send it out with your truck to landfill. That cost would be enormous, the cost of it, and it wouldn't be practical. Whereas if we collect the material, it goes through the biosecurity step, and the government has complete biosecurity for food waste, for all commercial food waste that is collected by this company.
Yeah, it's such a big issue, and it's great to hear that you've put so much focus on finding a rigorous solution to the biosecurity problem, particularly, yes, African swine fever, a very dangerous pathogen out there. Norm, we're nearly out of time, unfortunately, but before we wrap up, I just wanted to ask you about how's it going? Maybe you can give us a snapshot of the uptake of this technology across agriculture in Australia, and also a bit of a profile of operations internationally.
Okay. Okay. Being mindful of time, I'll be as quick as I can. Food Recycle is essentially a technology company. We've developed all this, and our marketing of this technology is through a licensing program, which is fairly common around the world. You license technology to somebody who then actually operates it. There's no way we could get this technology out across the globe without a licensing program, because we would have to, every time we do a production facility, you're talking, $20 million or something a bit more than that. And you need, in Australia alone, we need at least 25 to 30 production facilities, standard production facilities. So we have a standard size facility. That facility produces, can produce at maximum output 100 tons of poultry feed per day, or 30,000 tons per year, and utilizes 200 tons of food waste every day. So we've licensed OzHarvest Ventures, which is a for-profit arm of OzHarvest, and they're working with a large, it's a bit confidential at the moment, but they're working with a large collection, Australian or international actually, collection company, and they're raising the capital at the moment to build the first production facility, the first of seven that they intend to build, one in each state in the next, between now and 2028. So Australia and New Zealand has been licensed and they're up and running. We're very pleased with the way that's going. They'll build their first production facility next year. With a bit of luck, it'll be finished by the end of next year. Internationally, I'm working with the World Bank and the International Finance Corporation out of Washington, D.C., and they introduced me to many of their existing clients around the world. I've physically been to a dozen countries in the last 9 months to meet with potential licensees. 2.5 months ago, Food Recycle International licensed one country. Again, it's under a confidentiality agreement because they're in the regulatory approval stage. And that country is building 10 production facilities over the next 7 years. That is a contract for Food Recycle International for over $250 million. So 254 million on the current exchange rate. So, and I'm working at least with another 12 countries globally. But the figures are a bit stupid because when you consider, I'm working in India, for example, and we've done a lot of work. We have a food waste resource team that travels to countries, does a survey on the food waste and what the resource is, where it's going at the moment, what they're doing, how much of it is there, what type of waste is there. And we essentially work out how we can utilize the food waste in a country. We've done that in Hyderabad, for example, and India is broken up into about four different regions, but the big company that we're talking to there, it says that they would need 1,000 production facilities to meet the food waste demand in India. We're working in Vietnam, and they're talking about 80 production facilities in Vietnam to meet the food waste, just 20 in just the Ho Chi Minh area. Now, they don't have to be, they can be, the production facility that we've designed can be expanded up or reduced down in size. So we can meet smaller countries in Africa, for example, if we've got somewhere that needs a smaller production facility so we can meet those. So the numbers are pretty stupid, but they're driven by the fact that the food waste is available. It's all about the food waste. And the facilities need to be pretty much where the food waste is. So this is not a have one big production plant out in the middle of New South Wales somewhere and carry all the food waste out to that. The first facility in New South Wales is likely to be at Parramatta. And just within the Parramatta region, there's enough to drive that one production facility. So just within, you know, a 10-kilometre radius of that facility, there's enough food waste to drive that one production facility. So you can imagine all of a sudden you need these sort of all around the place, collecting it's all about the demographics and the geographics of a particular region and what food waste is within that region. You might have an abattoir, you know, and they could be slaughtering, 100 cows a day, or steers. And so you've got all that food waste. So that will be driven to some extent by that raw material or that food waste stream and whatever else is available. So it's a matter of saying, right, oh, well, if we go here, we do a food waste resource report, understand what's within that geographical region, and then put in a base case production facility or two base case production facilities or whatever.
Well, it sounds like the potential for uptake around the world is just huge, and I'm glad to hear that there's so much interest out there. It sounds like this technology has a very bright future, Norm.
Yeah, well, at the moment, it's the only go-to solution. And as I mentioned earlier, we're patented on that, and we're patented in more than 140 countries, at a great cost, by the way. That's just the way it is. And as we've developed the production facilities, we've also developed some production technologies that we've patented as well. So we're well protected from a technology point of view, which is good for Australia. This sort of stuff usually leaves the country and we buy it back later. But in this case, Australia's exporting it. So we're very happy about that.
Well, we might have to catch up with you in a future episode of Food Waste Matters to see how it's all going. I know you're really busy, so I'm going to have to wrap it up for you there and let you go. But I just want to say thank you so much for joining us today, Norm.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me with you.
And if subscribers would like to know more about Food Recycle International, just visit their website. It's www.foodrecycle, it's one word, foodrecycle.com. And thank you, everybody, for joining us in this edition of Food Waste Matters, which is brought to you by Honey and Fox, sponsored by the Fight Food Waste CRC. The Food Waste Hub is for everybody who is interested in reducing food waste. Please invite your colleagues to sign up to our mailing list and get notified when new content is published. Just visit our website, www.fightfoodwastehub.com.au. And don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel, Food Waste Matters. If you want to get in touch with us here at the Hub, please send an email to hello@fightfoodwastehub.com.au. And we'd love to hear from you with feedback, comments, or questions. But until next time, keep up the fight.